Section 1. Listening. This section of the test has three parts. You will hear three recordings which you will listen to twice. While listening, answer the questions in the appropriate part of the test. Follow the instructions. When answering questions in the first and second part, use the answer sheet labelled with a cross. When answering questions in the third part, use the answer sheet labelled with a pen. Now prepare the answer sheet labelled with a cross. Part 1. You will hear an interview with John Glenn, who will talk about his involvement in space flights and public life. For the following statements, 1 to 7, choose the correct answer A, B, C or D. There is always only one correct answer. Mark your answers on the answer sheet labelled with a cross. Now you have 2 minutes to read the tasks. Now listen to part 1.
You will hear an interview with John Glenn, who is a former American pilot, engineer, astronaut, and United States Senator. You've been in a unique position, having met a number of presidents, including Kennedy, Johnson, and Clinton. Could you give us a one-sentence impression based on your experience with them?
Ooh, that's dangerous when you get into one-phrase descriptions of people. Anyone who's been President of the United States is very capable and at the same time very, very complex. People have asked me about President Kennedy in particular because I knew him fairly well. One thing that was typical of him and of most great people is curiosity. Most people who accomplish things are like that. I was asked to brief President Kennedy before my flight. I went in thinking he wouldn't want to know all the details, and so I described the plans in general terms, but he asked very detailed questions. After a while, I said, "Mr. President, I gather you want to hear about this in more detail. If you like, I'll come back in a couple of weeks with models and we can really go into this."
What about the people you have met in your life?
The rocket engineer Wernher von Braun was running the Huntsville Center, and everyone thought he was the big rocket expert, which he was. He invited us to his home for dinner, and I thought when we went in his library it would be full of nothing but math books. I looked around, and there were very few on engineering. He had books on religion and comparative religion philosophies. He was well-read in literature, too. But when you talked to him about philosophy, he'd just light up. He was curious about everything.
What did you learn in the Senate that would be useful for teens today?
You deal with so many different things. I guess what teens today can do is get the broadest education possible so they're not channeled into one tiny area. I think a broad background proved to be so valuable when I got to the Senate.
What were some of the highs and lows of your career as a senator?
Since I've been through two wars, I couldn't imagine how much more horrible a nuclear war could be. When I got to the Senate, I found out there wasn't much going on in the area of control, so I took the leadership in the area of weapons of mass destruction and how we control them internationally. I'm proud of some of the bills in education I supported and was able to work on, and some of the things in the environment as well.
Teenagers admire a lot of people, so I'm wondering, what role models did you have growing up?
No one person. I admired different people, teachers, public figures, and historical figures. Abraham Lincoln is one, for being able to fight for human rights. You can pick up certain things about people that you admire. No one person embodies everything. I guess I try to adopt traits of different people.
I remember reading that on your flight, you brought your son's Boy Scout knife and your daughter's brooch. Did you have any other special items in space on your missions?
Yes, I did. On the first flight, though, I got permission to take a little gold pin and some little silk flags that could be rolled up and didn't weigh much. Weight was very important, particularly on that first flight. But it's very, very tightly controlled. NASA has to know absolutely everything that is going on a flight, and that's the way it should be.
Are there any movies you consider inspirational?
None that I've seen recently. People always ask if I watch space movies. The Right Stuff misrepresented things so badly that I can't recommend it. The best space movie, actually, is Apollo 13, because that's the way it happened. It's a documentary. Jim Lovell is a good friend, and he was the technical advisor. He didn't let Hollywood run away with it. It's a good one. Now listen again.
You will hear an interview with John Glenn, who is a former American pilot, engineer, astronaut, and United States senator. You've been in a unique position, having met a number of presidents, including Kennedy, Johnson, and Clinton. Could you give us a one-sentence impression based on your experience with them?
Ooh, that's dangerous when you get into one-phrase descriptions of people. Anyone who's been president of the United States is very capable and at the same time very, very complex. People have asked me about President Kennedy in particular because I knew him fairly well. One thing that was typical of him, and of most great people, is curiosity. Most people who accomplish things are like that. I was asked to brief President Kennedy before my flight. I went in thinking he wouldn't want to know all the details, and so I described the plans in general terms, but he asked very detailed questions. After a while, I said, "Mr. President, I gather you want to hear about this in more detail. If you like, I'll come back in a couple of weeks with models and we can really go into this."
What about the people you have met in your life?
The rocket engineer Wernher von Braun was running the Huntsville Center, and everyone thought he was the big rocket expert, which he was. He invited us to his home for dinner, and I thought when we went in his library it would be full of nothing but math books. I looked around, and there were very few on engineering. He had books on religion and comparative religion philosophies. He was well-read in literature, too. But when you talked to him about philosophy, he'd just light up. He was curious about everything.
What did you learn in the Senate that would be useful for teens today?
You deal with so many different things. I guess what teens today can do is get the broadest education possible so they're not channeled into one tiny area. I think a broad background proved to be so valuable when I got to the Senate.
What were some of the highs and lows of your career as a senator?
Since I've been through two wars, I couldn't imagine how much more horrible a nuclear war could be. When I got to the Senate, I found out there wasn't much going on in the area of control, so I took the leadership in the area of weapons of mass destruction and how we control them internationally. I'm proud of some of the bills in education I supported and was able to work on, and some of the things in the environment as well.
Teenagers admire a lot of people, so I'm wondering, what role models did you have growing up?
No one person. I admired different people. Teachers, public figures, and historical figures. Abraham Lincoln is one, for being able to fight for human rights. You can pick up certain things about people that you admire. No one person embodies everything. I guess I try to adopt traits of different people.
I remember reading that on your flight, you brought your son's Boy Scout knife and your daughter's brooch. Did you have any other special items in space on your missions?
Yes, I did. On the first flight, though, I got permission to take a little gold pin and some little silk flags that could be rolled up and didn't weigh much. Weight was very important, particularly on that first flight. But it's very, very tightly controlled. NASA has to know absolutely everything that is going on a flight, and that's the way it should be.
Are there any movies you consider inspirational?
None that I've seen recently. People always ask if I watch space movies. The Right Stuff misrepresented things so badly that I can't recommend it. The best space movie, actually, is Apollo 13, because that's the way it happened. It's a documentary. Jim Lovell is a good friend, and he was the technical advisor. He didn't let Hollywood run away with it. It's a good one. Now you have 30 more seconds to complete the tasks. Part 2. You will hear two women discussing their personal and professional lives. Nikki Morgan, who is a Member of Parliament, and Kim Ingleby, who is a personal trainer. For questions 8 to 13, decide whether the statements are true, A, false, B, or whether the information was not given, C. Mark your answers on the answer sheet labelled with a cross. Now you have 2 minutes to read the tasks. Now listen to part two.
You will hear a radio program in which the personal and professional lives of two successful British women will be discussed. Nicky Morgan, the Conservative Member of Parliament from Loughborough, will talk about daily routines in her professional and personal life.
I start most days at about 6:30 a.m. with a 30 to 40 minute run. When I'm in London, the flat I rent is a 10-minute walk from the House of Commons, so I run along the Thames and often think how privileged I am to do what I do. That gives me a boost. I'm more of a morning person and prefer to get difficult things done early. I get in at 8 a.m. to tackle emails and would love to say I survive on grains and herbal teas, but coffee and chocolate play a part. I'm a government whip behind the scenes, helping to get policies through the House of Commons, so my days are filled with briefings with other MPs and people in my departments, transport, culture, media and sport. Most days in London, I finish work around 11 p.m. and get to bed by midnight, as I'll be up early the next day. My biggest energy crunch was the general election of 2010. I had a 2-year-old son and it was 4.5 weeks of 16-hour days. But when you can see the end in sight, it's easier to push through.
Kim Ingleby, who is a personal trainer and founder of a well-being consultancy company, will talk about daily routines in her professional and personal life.
Most days I am up at 5:30 a.m., training corporate or celebrity clients, running classes or doing one-to-one sessions. I often spend the rest of the day writing fitness features for the press. I try to be brutal about switching off my devices at 9 p.m. and I head to bed at about 10:30 to 11 p.m. Keeping a strong boundary between work and home keeps me motivated and balanced, but I've always thrived on being busy. Over the last few years, I've completed the Ironman UK, London Marathon, and trekked across the Andes on horseback, all while refurbishing a house. The energy crunch of my life came in June when I did a triathlon and contracted Wales disease from the water we swam in. It was quite serious bacterial infection that caused rapid organ damage. I was on strong medication for a month, barely able to get out of bed. Being so ill taught me that stopping can be a good thing too. I had no choice but to rest and let my body recover. Before a big race, I do the opposite of what most people do and get as relaxed as I can. The less energy you waste getting stressed, the better, as that can lead to an adrenaline surge that can tire you out later. Instead, I visualize what I want to see happen like a movie in my head. It works.
Now listen again.
You will hear a radio program in which the personal and professional lives of two successful British women will be discussed. Nicky Morgan, the Conservative Member of Parliament from Loughborough, will talk about daily routines in her professional and personal life.
I start most days at about 6:30 a.m. with a 30 to 40 minute run. When I'm in London, the flat I rent is a 10-minute walk from the House of Commons, so I run along the Thames and often think how privileged I am to do what I do. That gives me a boost. I'm more of a morning person and prefer to get difficult things done early. I get in at 8 a.m. to tackle emails and would love to say I survive on grains and herbal teas, but coffee and chocolate play a part. I'm a government whip behind the scenes, helping to get policies through the House of Commons, so my days are filled with briefings with other MPs and people in my departments, transport, culture, media and sport. Most days in London, I finish work around 11 p.m. and get to bed by midnight, as I'll be up early the next day. My biggest energy crunch was the general election of 2010. I had a 2-year-old son and it was 4.5 weeks of 16-hour days. But when you can see the end in sight, it's easier to push through.
Kim Ingleby, who is a personal trainer and founder of a well-being consultancy company, will talk about daily routines in her professional and personal life.
Most days I am up at 5:30 a.m., training corporate or celebrity clients, running classes or doing one-to-one sessions. I often spend the rest of the day writing fitness features for the press. I tried to be brutal about switching off my devices at 9 p.m. and I head to bed at about 10:30 to 11 p.m. Keeping a strong boundary between work and home keeps me motivated and balanced, but I've always thrived on being busy. Over the last few years, I've completed the Ironman UK, London Marathon, and trekked across the Andes on horseback, all while refurbishing a house. The energy crunch of my life came in June when I did a triathlon and contracted Wales disease from the water we swam in. It was quite serious bacterial infection that caused rapid organ damage. I was on strong medication for a month, barely able to get out of bed. Being so ill taught me that stopping can be a good thing too. I had no choice but to rest and let my body recover. Before a big race, I do the opposite of what most people do and get as relaxed as I can. The less energy you waste getting stressed, the better, as that can lead to an adrenaline surge that can tire you out later. Instead, I visualize what I want to see happen like a movie in my head. It works.
Now you have 30 more seconds to complete the tasks. Now look at part three. For part three, you will need the answer sheet labelled with a pen. Please find and prepare it. Part three. You will hear a radio programme in which six funny situations with food will be described. Below, you can read summaries of this information, numbered 14 to 20, which are in the wrong order. Indicate the order in which you hear the information by writing a number 1 to 6 next to the number that represents that information. Be careful. There is one extra summary. Put X next to the number that represents extra information. Write your answers on the answer sheet labelled with a pen. Now you have 2 minutes to read the tasks. Now listen to part three.
You are going to listen to a radio program in which six funny situations with food will be described.
Situation number one. A friend of mine was trying to set me up with her boyfriend's mate, so she suggested we all go out for dinner. Soon the chat was flowing and flirting a bit. I was smiling and playing with my hair. I wasn't overly hungry, so I ate lots of bread and yogurt dip. Her boyfriend's mate kept smiling at me. Thinking they were flirty glances, I returned them with a cheeky grin. But when he went to the loo, my friend was quick to point out that I had smeared dip in my hair and across my cheek. Unbelievably, we're still together now. Situation number two. I was hosting a baby shower for a friend, and I thought I'd make her favorite treats, chocolate brownies. I spent the whole day baking and insisted my friend had the first pick of them. But rather than saying, "Oh, delicious," she suddenly started gagging. It turns out I'd used salt instead of sugar. The other girls found it hilarious. Situation number three. I was on a date with a guy who suggested we buy some hot chestnuts. I thought it was cute to share them, so he got us a bag. I put a whole one in my mouth, not realizing you need to take the shell off. Not only did I burn my mouth, I half choked on the shell and had to pick the rest out of my teeth. Luckily, the rest of the date went better. Situation number four. I'd arranged a meal for my best friend's birthday at a restaurant. At the end of it, a waitress asked us if she should bring the cake out. I was a bit confused as I'd forgotten to order one, but went with it. About 20 minutes later, she brought out a huge chocolate cupcake tower. So we sang happy birthday and dug in. My friend thought I'd gone to a lot of effort, so I didn't question it. As I settled the bill, though, the manager told me that they had mistakenly given us a cake meant for a 60th birthday later that evening. Situation number five. At my boyfriend's parents' house one Sunday, I was roped into helping prepare lunch for the family. His mom asked me to keep an eye on things as she went to pick up his sister from the station. I thought I was coping until I dropped the leg of lamb on the floor, and the dog ran over and started licking it. As nobody was in the kitchen, I just put it back in the oven. Luckily, I'm a vegetarian, but everyone else loved it. Situation number six. My boyfriend is French, and recently I was invited out for dinner with his family. I kept boasting how adventurous I was with food, so his dad suggested to the waiter, in French, that I should try one dish from the menu. To my absolute horror, a plate of snails was put in front of me. His dad looked at me expectantly, so I picked one up and put it in my mouth. But I had to spit it into a napkin. What a way to impress.
Now listen again.
You are going to listen to a radio program in which six funny situations with food will be described.
Situation number one. A friend of mine was trying to set me up with her boyfriend's mate, so she suggested we all go out for dinner. Soon the chat was flowing and flirting a bit. I was smiling and playing with my hair. I wasn't overly hungry, so I ate lots of bread and yogurt dip. Her boyfriend's mate kept smiling at me. Thinking they were flirty glances, I returned them with a cheeky grin. But when he went to the loo, my friend was quick to point out that I had smeared dip in my hair and across my cheek. Unbelievably, we're still together now. Situation number two. I was hosting a baby shower for a friend, and I thought I'd make her favorite treats, chocolate brownies. I spent the whole day baking and insisted my friend had the first pick of them. But rather than saying, "Oh, delicious," she suddenly started gagging. It turns out I'd used salt instead of sugar. The other girls found it hilarious. Situation number three. I was on a date with a guy who suggested we buy some hot chestnuts. I thought it was cute to share them, so he got us a bag. I put a whole one in my mouth, not realizing you need to take the shell off. Not only did I burn my mouth, I half choked on the shell and had to pick the rest out of my teeth. Luckily, the rest of the date went better. Situation number 4. I'd arranged a meal for my best friend's birthday at a restaurant. At the end of it, a waitress asked us if she should bring the cake out. I was a bit confused as I'd forgotten to order one, but went with it. About 20 minutes later, she brought out a huge chocolate cupcake tower. So we sang happy birthday and dug in. My friend thought I'd gone to a lot of effort, so I didn't question it. As I settled the bill, though, the manager told me that they had mistakenly given us a cake meant for a 60th birthday later that evening. Situation number 5. At my boyfriend's parents' house one Sunday, I was roped into helping prepare lunch for the family. His mom asked me to keep an eye on things as she went to pick up his sister from the station. I thought I was coping until I dropped the leg of lamb on the floor and the dog ran over and started licking it. As nobody was in the kitchen, I just put it back in the oven. Luckily, I'm a vegetarian, but everyone else loved it. Situation number 6. My boyfriend is French, and recently I was invited out for dinner with his family. I kept boasting how adventurous I was with food, so his dad suggested to the waiter, in French, that I should try one dish from the menu. To my absolute horror, a plate of snails was put in front of me. His dad looked at me expectantly, so I picked one up and put it in my mouth. But I had to spit it into a napkin. What a way to impress!
Now you have 30 more seconds to complete the tasks. The listening section is now over. Please stop working on this section. Now go on to the next sections of the test.